I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
Here comes the Colonel.
Yeah, right. Even the president is a ham. Thanks a lot, guys. All right, welcome back. The second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. The first half hour, Colonel Pennington, Andrew Pennington, was telling us how we have to build in security into our systems right from the beginning. It's too expensive and too difficult going and trying to put security back in later on. He's going to expand more on that. And we're going to have Shawa Liu, a professor at Baylor College, to tell us about tissue engineering. But right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we keep here on the set for today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help?
Of course. We threw in the coins, and so we have awakened the spirit of the fountain, who knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all for a price. All right, spirit of the fountain, here is today's query. The island of Sardinia belongs to which country? The island of Sardinia, O Spirit of the Fountain, do you know which country it belongs to? I'll give you a hint. Italy or Turkey? Trick question there. All right, O Spirit of the Fountain, put on your thinking cap or your shower cap or whatever you use and tell us, please.
I have given you my answer. Now you may tell me.
Aha. Cannot stump the spirit of the fountain. Well, I gave you a hint, right? Sure. Sardinia? Yeah, it's Italian. Of course it is. Belongs to Italy. All right. We'll try to come up with some tougher questions next time. Back to our program.
If you're talking about electronic warfare versus cyber attack, you're looking at targeting the radio frequency channels, you know, for jamming, targeting the GPS systems, navigation aids, and you can even get into including electromagnetic pulse weapons and stuff that actually try to take out the aircraft. And other things you can do, such as meekening electronic warfare attack, where you can take control of or basically misguide an unmanned aircraft system by pretending to be a navigation aid. And there are some people who have said that that's a cyber attack, but it's really an electronic warfare attack in the industry vernacular. So to answer your question with those things in mind, when we look at a cyber attack and how do we address that, how do we overcome it, the way to do that is to do what we do with any other system that processes data. And that's to apply the risk management framework. The first step of that is to identify what vulnerabilities exist on the aircraft. So we've mentioned, you know, you've given a couple of great ideas of you know, ways that we can protect the systems or why we should protect the systems. And we've talked a little bit about how those systems can be misused. But the idea here is how to secure this from a technical perspective. And NIST has provided a framework, a six-step framework that allows us to do that within the same structure or architecture that we would use to protect any other computer system.
Yeah, cloak and dagger stuff continues. All right. At the meeting this week on the 22nd, you're going to make a presentation and speak about the things that you're kind of giving us a preview on right at the moment. But when it's over with, what is the takeaway? What do you want people to be most impressed with at the end of your presentation?
Well, simply put, that the application of the national or the National Institute of Standards and Technologies standards for securing any information processing system can and should be applied to drone technology to make them safe and to ensure that we have privacy and that we don't need to reinvent the wheel. We've basically been doing this for years to secure other cyber systems, and what we have to do is think about what is the vulnerability and what is the threat to the systems. And when we put all of those things together, when we look at what the vulnerability is and what the threat is, and we apply that basic math from security, we can basically see what the risk is for a system. And then once we identify the risk and we apply the risk management framework, we're going to follow these six steps of categorizing the system, selecting security controls to mitigate or eliminate the risk, implementing those controls, assessing those controls to see if they're effective, and then we need to authorize the system for use and then monitor it to make sure it is being done effectively. And my takeaway is that the application of those six steps of what we call the security lifecycle, spelled out in this pub, special pub 800-39, if you apply that to drones, we're going to be so, so far ahead of where we are right now. And we're just now beginning to do that. But I would say one area that we're really needing to develop additional standards are is the authorization of systems to operate according to that system. So right now, if we look at this security lifecycle and we say we're going to apply that to drones, if we apply it to a computer system such as you use in your business for enterprise operations, somebody has to do an approval or authorization to operate, ATO. And the bottom line is that right now people are producing UAVs and they're allowed to operate, but right now there's nobody actually going in and saying, are they secure? Because we still need to develop those standards. And I think that's where the focus needs to be.
So you're looking for an act of Congress to set up a standards and procedures construction of drones?
Well, Congress has already requested the FAA to regulate that, and that legal authority under U.S. code is under the purview of the FAA. They are charged with the responsibility of the secure and safe operation of aircraft within the national airspace system. So Congress, by default, has already authorized that. Now it's up to the FAA to go ahead and produce those standards.
Okay, so what we're doing is we're calling on the FAA to move along a little faster and get those standards in place and an enforcement procedure for it. But I could imagine a techie genius building from scratch the kind of drone that he wants, equip it with a firearm or with an explosive or something else, and having his own communication system that has nothing at all to do with these standards, and just building it in his basement. I mean, isn't that possible?
Yeah, it certainly is. But again, all we can really rely on is the creation of laws to regulate that industry and then find ways to effectively prosecute people who break those laws. I mean, you could make the same argument that someone could go out and build a car or any other type of vehicle in their basement and operate it on a road unsafely, unsecurely, because they've ignored the laws. And there's plenty of people who know how to build a vehicle to do that. The question is, do we have the laws in place that allow us to prosecute those people, and do we have the technologies and the training on our law enforcement that allow us to apprehend those folks? The really scary part to me about the UAS systems is that the technology is evolving so rapidly and becoming so small that it's going to be more and more harder to stop them. You can't create the laws until the technology is created. You can try to anticipate those things and create broader reaching laws, but then you always have to balance the fact that the nation has to maintain its freedoms for the populace, and that's critically important in our society. To me, the most critical thing is that we maintain the freedoms as well as balance that with the need to maintain the security of the citizens. So I would say, in summary, do not look at the UAS system as, oh my God, there's a drone flying overhead that could contain a bomb. If you get to that point, you're really living in a state of fear, and that's one of the goals that has always been announced by terrorists since, they started with terrorism. I mean, you can go back to, piracy and everything else hundreds of years ago and other terrorist actions, and the idea is to create fear in the populace and distrust with your government because that fear is created. So the simple fact of the matter is you could always use any vehicle, piloted or unpiloted, manned or unmanned, to attack somebody. What it all comes down to is how do we regulate it and how do we apprehend people and how do we prosecute people if they misuse the technology. But this is going to keep changing, just as every other new technology has changed laws as they come out.
Wow, what challenges we have ahead of us. It keeps getting more complex all the time. I mean, I could imagine law enforcement has got to be really, really perplexed with all these things, what we're facing. Give us a look down the line, maybe 5, 10, 20 years into the future. Put on your thinking cap. What do you see evolving in the next 10, 20 years or so? Do you have a prediction for us?
Well, actually, we're going to merge. We're not going to look at UAS systems as the single threat. We're going to look at any unmanned mobile system. And what we're seeing right now is intense development in the field of robotics, for instance. So let me ask you this. What would you be more concerned about? Walking down the street with a robot, you can see, you know, what the Japanese are designing, the robots that will go out and that can do cleaning, or that can go out and run an errand for you down the street, pick something up and bring it to you. That's an autonomous system too, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So would you rather have one of those walking by you on the street? I mean, you don't know if it could blow up or not. So, you know, you really have to get away from that fear of technology. You have to get away from it. You have to embrace it. Accept it, determine what you're going to do with it. And as you embrace it, that goes back to, we really need to sit down and think about how we're going to let that technology move into our lives. I really don't think people, you know, are going to stop using or developing unmanned systems, whether they're robotic, maritime, you know, robotic ground systems, maritime, or aircraft systems, because of fear. The fear is healthy, though, because it will help us develop and secure them. But you can't be any more afraid of, 10 years from now, passing a robot on a sidewalk delivering a pizza than, you know, and that robot might look like a trash can with wheels going by, you know, or a small oven with wheels walking by you. But you can't be any more afraid of that than you can be afraid of, you know, walking down a city sidewalk and worried that somebody has placed an explosive in the car that's passing you. We have to get past that and identify ways to secure the system. So that's what we're going to see, is a huge emphasis on anticipating how the systems can be misused and then regulating that.
Okay, in the meantime, the FAA, move along a little faster, FAA. We need these security systems in place. All right, Andy, you've been a fascinating guest. We're looking forward to meeting you at the Metricon conference going on the 22nd this week. And we can't wait to see you and to hear what you have to say. And we really appreciate you being a guest on the program. Before we get out of here, I know that you've had mentors during the course of your life, and you're probably mentoring people right now as a colonel in the Air Force and the other duties that you're doing. Do you have a kind of a creed to live by? Maybe word of wisdom or something you can share with us? Maybe a life lesson that you would pass on to someone?
I'll go back to the discussion that we had, and that's, don't make your decisions based on fear. There's so many things we can be afraid of, and fear elicits a fight or flight response, and sometimes it also creates a freeze response. And we're seeing freeze right now in the development of our laws. We're seeing fright in the development of these systems. And what we really need to do is identify what the benefit is, what the advantage is of the systems, and figure out where we want these autonomous systems in our life. I am much, much more concerned about the intrusiveness of surveillance systems or electronics being integrated with humankind over the next 20 to 30 years, as we develop new embedded technologies and such. That, I mean, if you're wearing a set of eyeglasses and you don't follow your the type of eyeglasses that produce a computer display in front of you while you're walking, and they have a camera on that, what's to stop somebody from hijacking that camera and watching everything you do? We already know that people, for instance, can cyber attack a computer and take over the camera on your personal computer. That's why I never put one in a bedroom or anywhere else where might be embarrassed. So, you know, those things are already with us. What we have to do right now is to leverage fear so that it becomes productive.
Yeah, you kind of remind me of the words of former Undersecretary of State Richard Armitage when he said there's nothing that the terrorists can do to change our way of life, but we can change our own way of life because of the fear of the terrorists, and that's something that we have to watch out for. I admired his words on that. Well, Colonel Andrew Pennington, speaking about unmanned aircraft systems' vulnerability to cyber warfare, you've been fascinating, and we're looking forward to seeing you at the Metricon conference October 22nd. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, too, and I really appreciate this opportunity to chat. Have a good day.
And you're tuned to the
right
Science
now,
Meeting.
I want to introduce you to a very fascinating person, Dr. Xiaobo Liu. He's assistant professor, Baylor College of Dentistry in Dallas,
and he's in the study of nanobiomaterials and regenerative medicine. Dr. Liu is going to tell us a little bit about tissue engineering, of which I know nothing. Welcome to the program, Dr. Liu.
Thank you for having me.
Now, tissue engineering, this is regenerative medicine? This is having our bodies regenerate body parts like maybe a starfish does or something?
Yes. So the tissue engineering is a concept. Originally, it started in the late 1980s, and from MIT, several labs, especially from Bob Langer and Dr. Vacanti. And the idea of tissue engineering is because when people are getting old, or because of the aging and accident, we have the trauma, so people often lose some the tissues or organs function. So as a bioengineer, we are trying to repair or regenerate this dysfunctioned or lost tissue or organs. So that's a general idea of tissue engineering. And in tissue engineering, they have three components to compose the tissue engineering. Mm-hmm. At the first part, we need to have some cells from the patient. And second, we need to have some biomaterials acting as a scaffold. And then we also need to have some signals or bioactive molecules to coax the cells to guide the cell to differentiate to form the designed tissues. So that's the general idea of tissue engineering. We usually use stem cells, like mesenchymal stem cell for bone regeneration, and in my tissue or in my dental field, we also use like dental palm stem cell for denting and palm regeneration.
And you're in the College of Dentistry, so you're talking also about regeneration of dental tissues. I mean, I presume that would mean gums, but would that also include teeth?
We are very interested in regenerate the pump, living pump tissues. You know, in U.S. alone, over 90% of the population from 18 to 65, they had the dental caries, and if this disease like is very severe, we often need to do the root canal treatment to see the dentist.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my research projects, actually what we want to do is try to use tissue regeneration technique to regenerate the living, the pump and the dentin tissues. So in that way, then we can regenerate the whole like tissues. So the tooth is regenerated, is still a living tooth instead of dead tooth after root canal treatment.
We've been hoping, of course, for a long time that somehow science will come up with a way of regenerating teeth, since we generate them as children and then again as we get our adult teeth. But if you're trying to, you're saying that this is really, we're on the verge of doing that. Do you have a time frame, you think, how soon it might be that we will be able to regenerate new teeth?
I think for the whole tooth regeneration, I expect it's still a long way to go. But for the tissues, tooth tissues regeneration, for example, the pulp and dentin tissue regeneration, is just part of tooth. That regeneration, it's now in animal study, we already can get a very successful result. So that time frame, I expect it should be, should not be long.
So you were, I think I, what I heard you say is that the whole tooth regeneration is something that you think is still some time away, but partial teeth regeneration, portions of teeth regeneration, you think is pretty close?
Yeah, at least, like in animal study, we already showed that used tissue engineering strategy, we can successfully regenerate living pump and dentin, this kind of structure. So I feel it's promising, like for just a small part of tooth tissues regeneration.
And Dr. Liu, can you? You're going to be speaking at the October 22nd at the Arlington Convention Center for MetroCon, and making a presentation there to the engineers in this very exciting field. What is the one big message that you want them to kind of to leave with? What's going to be the takeaway from your talk?
So my talk in that presentation will focus on design and develop new biomaterials and the controlled drug delivery for dental and craniofacial tissue regeneration. I will show a few new biomaterials I designed and developed in my life, and these materials can be made into a scaffold, and this scaffold shows the very promising results for dental and tissue regeneration, as well as for the soft tissue regeneration.
And the scaffolds, of course, will be injectable, and this whole process then can be injected at any particular part of the body that we want to have regenerated. Is that right?
Yes.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you being with us, Dr. Liu. It's been a real pleasure, and we'll look forward to seeing you at the Arlington Convention Center October 22nd for MetroCon. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Sun Tzu, 500 BC. My dear friend, he said, all warfare is based on deception. So, keep in mind that there are people trying to use deception to penetrate everything we do in our daily lives. And they clearly don't have our best interest in heart, whether it's for monetary gain, to get in our accounts or whatever. John Adams, the author of Cyber Blackout, When the Lights Go Out, Nation at Risk.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.